Inside the Game, brought to you by Raider Media.
Well, the Bulls have undergone a revolution of sorts over the past few months. A new director of rugby in Jake White, some new players, and a brand new CEO. Welcome to Inside the Game, where we feature the Bulls' new man in charge, Edgar Rathbone. Edgar, welcome to the show.
Derek, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
No, absolute pleasure. Edgar, I can imagine it's been quite a busy few days since the announcement was made last week. You taking over from Alphonse Meyer, who decided to quit the role last month. And yeah, was it an opportunity you took almost immediately? We're going to get to your background shortly, but yeah, I can imagine when someone like the Bulls come calling, you don't say no quickly.
Yeah, Derek, I wouldn't say it wasn't something I decided quickly on. You know, I've built up great bonds here at the Lions, and I think we've had a very, very good 7 years that I've been here, built up great friendships. We have great sponsors and partners. So tough to leave that behind, but yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity that obviously presented itself.
Yeah, you say 7 years. You started back in 2013. If I recall, you were head of finance and administration in 2013. So, I mean, the rapid rise that you've had through the different positions over at the Lions have certainly ended with you taking over this position over at the Bulls. But, yeah, you have worn a number of different caps over at the Lions in these past 7 years.
Yeah, as you say, I started off head of finance and admin in 2013, which was quite an interesting introduction, being out of Super Rugby. And all the sponsors basically walking away at that time. And then, yeah, went into a CFO position and then took over the commercials. And in 2017, lucky enough to be back to managing director of our commercial company and that runs the stadia. So, yeah, I was very fortunate that guys like Rudolph and Altman here backed me through these changes in careers and yeah, as you said, was quite a rapid rise, but with great support.
Talk us through the 2013 baptism of fire. You alluded to it a little earlier regarding Super Rugby and the Lions not being involved at the time. I mean, yeah, it couldn't have been easy given that specific role where money is everything and you in charge of the numbers, and yeah, the numbers simply weren't coming in.
Yeah, I know. It was a few awkward phone calls to creditors and that sort of thing. But again, I mean, there's great people in the Lions rugby community that sort of understood that. And then obviously going into that Super Rugby playoff against the Kings, where it ended up as points difference of 2 points. And I think people forget how close it actually was and how close it was to the Lions probably being out of Super Rugby for a very long time if that wasn't the case, you know. So it was knife's edge stuff, but lucky enough that we got through that and then sort of upwards and onwards from there, you know. And like I said, great partners came on board. I think if I recall correctly, Johnson's Workwear was the first one that supported us in 2014. Xerox coming back, and then obviously a big signing of Emirates at the end of 2014, which really was sort of the springboard.
Yeah, it's amazing if you look back from those 2013 years from a side being out of Super Rugby and how they managed to bounce back incredibly well. People always point to what took place on the field, but of course there's what happens off the field that leads to a lot of the success on it as well. So that would be massive feather in the caps of yourself, Rudolph Strahle, amongst many. And yeah. I mean, talk us through that succession phase that you had in terms of succeeding on the field. I think, what was it, 3 Super Rugby finals over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it was 2016, 17, 18, if I recall correctly. It was a special period. You know, there was, I think we were lucky enough that we managed to keep the coaching squad and players together for quite a period of time, where a lot of the players arrived here as sort of no names, and really became superstars, you know, and guys like Franco Mostert and those winning the World Cup last year. So I think that was part of the success, keeping everybody together. It reflects on the field, Derek, and there was a great sort of family atmosphere. Well, there still is, yeah, at the Lions, you know, and you can't walk away from that. You really need to treasure that.
Yeah, if ever I think of the saying, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, I always immediately think of the Lions in terms of the team and how well they did. With the lack of superstars, and I don't mean to disparage any players that were in that side, because of course they went on to superstardom. You think of the likes of Warren Whiteley, Courtney Skosan, Andries Coetzee, they all went on to become boxer, Ross Cronier, to name but a few. But initially, it was almost hand-me-downs from other sides. And you guys managed to work them up into this powerhouse unit, which became the cream of the crop in South African rugby and in the Southern Hemisphere.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. There was a lot of guys that came over from other unions, and I think that's where Akers and Swayze and Rudolph at that time was very good at identifying very good talent, you know. Faf de Klerk coming from the Pumas. Just the way things started, I remember quite clearly 2014, first game back into Super Rugby, playing against the Cheetahs. And Manets Bosov kicking a drop goal in extra time to get that first win and sort of springboard the momentum for years to come, you know. Rugby is a funny game, so you never know how it would have ended if that first game didn't happen in that way, you know.
Yeah, you mentioned Johan Ackermann, and we've got Swayze, and it must have been a tumultuous time losing the likes of Johan Ackermann, who went over to Gloucester. Of course, we all know how well he did as coach over at the Lions. And of course, it's the same with every team. You go through different phases, and you've got to start a whole new wave of recruits, especially when it comes to coaching. But yeah, you went over from Johan Ackermann, Swayze to Brain, etc. I mean, how big a blow is that, losing people of that caliber and having known how well they are to the entire machine that is the Lions?
It's obviously it's a massive loss. But I think something that we also got right here is sort of working off that All Black model, where your next coach gets groomed in the system, and when there's a change, the next guy is ready to take over. I think they've had great success with that, with Steve Hansen after Graham Hendry, and now Ian Foster after Steve Hansen. So I think that's part of the story here, that, you know, there's always a succession planning after Johan came Swayze, and after Swayze came Cash, you know. So that definitely does help, you know. It definitely does help if there's someone in the system that understood what brought success earlier, you know.
Do you have any ideas as to when or if we'll see Swayze back in the fold? And I'm not talking just the Lions, but elsewhere. I mean, of course, he left the Lions. He went and joined the Springboks, and then left the box under fairly controversial and personal circumstances just ahead of the World Cup. It's sad to see a rugby mind like that not being involved in the sport at the moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's got massive, as you say, a great rugby mind. When he will be back in a coaching position, that's obviously something you're going to have to ask him. You know, I think the work he's doing for SuperSport is fantastic, and just the analysis of the coin toss of the World Cup shows you where his mind is. You know, he's a great analyzer of situations. So I agree. I mean, someone like that, we need to keep in the South African rugby system. Hopefully he can be involved somewhere in the future at a franchise.
Just final touches on the Lions. How much influence did you have on the day-to-day runnings of matters on the field? Did you have any influence whatsoever? I know that you and I have often been in talks via WhatsApp in terms of players and personnel and coaching, etc. And I always wonder, is this just your own opinion and you don't really have much impact with regards to that? Or do you have quite a bit of influence when it comes to matters on the field?
Look, obviously, I mean, the coaches have got their job. We, at the Lions operating a bit differently, where we have a pro committee that looks at contracting of players and that sort of thing. And I've been part of that structure since 2014 already. So I'm part of the contracting and looking at players and coming in and out, I've been involved in that since 2014, but obviously on field stuff, that's the coach's job, man.
I'm glad to hear, although I do really value your input, and I'm sure a lot of people do, and one just needs to look at how you have managed to rise through the ranks to see that you certainly know mug, no matter what you dedicate yourself to. Now, going back, and like me, you're a product of the Eastern Cape. Now, I went to a fairly unfashionable school over in PE called Victoria Park VP, and we didn't have many rugby triumphs over the years, but one that I always loved holding on to was our victories over Gill College, where you went to school. And I remember the first time that I played in a winning side over Gill. My old man, he couldn't believe it. He said, how is that possible? He goes, Gill College produced the Duplessis brothers. And, I mean, it's a renowned rugby school. But tell us a bit more about who is Edgar Rathbone and how did you come to be where you are right now?
Yeah, Derek, as you say, I was fortunate enough to grow up in the Eastern Cape in a town called Somerset East. It was a fantastic upbringing to live in a small town like that. Going through primary school and high school at Gill College, a fantastic school, as you say, with a rich history. I think in the time I was there, it was about 135 years old already, you know. So it's really got a rich history with the Duplessis brothers and Hannes Marais and F.R. Meiring and those guys who became Springboks out of that school, you know. I still recall us taking a picture when we were on the trick, and we were 18 kids that were together from grade one up until matric, which was quite special, you know. I don't think a lot of people can say that, and lucky enough to have contact with most of those still. And then after school, went to Stellenbosch, fortunate enough to go there, stayed in Res, and it was obviously great times, you know. Being a student is always fun, but I think being a student in Stellenbosch is even better, you know. So I had a good time there, played a bit of rugby, and then at some stage you decide, listen, there's still a degree to finish here. So I had to get that done. And then moved up to Joburg in 2010, which in itself was quite daunting. I think I said to someone the other day, it was the second time I came to Joburg in my life. So that was interesting. But again, it was a decision that time to say, well, get out of comfort zones and Cape Town is a bit of a comfort zone, especially if you just moved from Stellenbosch to Cape Town, and gave myself a new challenge to come to Joburg and Deloitte, and really met good people that helped me through my career. I mean, I met Stefan Kraser, who's on the board of the Bulls in 2011. You know, George Rotenbach from MegaPro at a young age. Actually, I think I met him the first year I was in Joburg, and then got introduced to Altman Allers at the end of my articles. And I was lucky enough that he offered me a job to come to the Lions in 2013. Been here ever since, for now 7.5 years already.
Did you ever have any aspirations to work in the sporting world, and not necessarily as a player, but being an administrator?
Yeah, I wish I still had the thing, but I wrote an essay in school. I think it was about grade 9, where you write essays on what you want to be one day. And I wrote an essay about working in sports, and I knew I was never good enough to make it as a professional rugby player, but working in sport and using your other skills. So, yeah, definitely something I chased quite hard from the first day I started studying. And as I said, lucky enough to meet the right people and got the break quite early.
Yeah, I think when you read up about Edgar Rathbone and you ask people about the man, one of the first things that is mentioned is his youthful looks. And I'm not kidding. I mean, this is one of the most recent ones that I saw. It said a youthful looking Edgar Rathbone posed in front of his new office, which is yet at Loftus. And yeah, you certainly are one of the youngest, if not the youngest, person to fill such a position in South Africa.
Yeah, as I said, it's a. I think the youthful looks might disappear quite quickly, but yeah, as I said, lucky enough to have got the first break in 2013 when I was 26, 27 years old. So it's fortunate. Not everybody can say that, but it's really just meeting the right people at the right time.
So you've taken over the role over at the Bulls, and it is arguably one of the most loved franchises in South African sport. And I'm talking across the board, not just necessarily rugby. And I don't know what the numbers are in terms of fans, but you will always find a Bulls fan no matter where you are in South Africa. It's a franchise that goes back eons and has been highly successful and is undoubtedly the most successful in South Africa when it comes to Super Rugby. Yet, it's been some dark times over at the Bulls of late. And, yeah, you've got to know that the pressure's on to turn it around and quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think every professional team goes through highs and lows. That's just part of sport. Yeah, unfortunately, you can't stay on top forever. But I think with obviously the board that they have there now and the appointment of Jake as coach and their plans is very ambitious, Derek. And I definitely believe they're on the right track. And I'm very happy to go on this journey with them and steer it into directions that they believe the Bulls should go and the successes that they believe the Bulls need to achieve. And as you say, I mean, it's a fantastically supported franchise by all demographics. And the partnership of the Bulls and Mamelodi Sundowns, I think, can just take this forward into a whole new dimension. And with partners that they've got on board like Vodacom, look, the recipe is there. It's just to put everything together now.
Let's talk about the Jake White factor, a man who has done his sheer duties for South Africa, of course, winning the World Cup back in 2007. Yet, despite his successes, he's proved to be a fairly divisive character within South Africa and beyond. And I read an article the other day, and again, you can't believe everything you read, but Pedri Vandenberg quoted us saying he was very surprised at the appointment because Jake used to hate the Bulls when he used to coach the Box and also subsequently when he took over the Sharks. And have you had many dealings with him since taking over the new role?
Yeah, we've had a few phone calls, Derek, and I must say, I mean, there's perceptions out there, and your perception is very far from reality. Normally, you know, if I had to believe every perception, I would have had to believe that every person that comes to Ellis Park gets mugged. You know, that is just the reality. But the matter of fact for Jake is that he's had massive successes as a coach. He's inducted into the World Rugby Hall of Fame. And my dealings with him has been fantastic so far, you know. So yeah, I mean, if as I say, if I have to believe everything I read in the media, I think it will be a dangerous world out there.
What has been your take on your dealings with him? I mean, in terms of your experiences in the past with other renowned coaches, looking back to Johan Ackerman, Swayze Brain, what does Jake White bring to the party? Have you been fairly surprised, impressed with your dealings? Again, it's been very short, so, yeah. Given the fact that you just took over recently. But yeah, I mean, what has stood out for you in dealing with Jake White?
No, I just think his way of thinking is a bit different from most people, Derek. And I think he's a serial winner. You know, he wants to win, and that's a great attribute. You know, and players want to play for him. If you talk to players, you mention the name of Jake White, I think it makes the contracting negotiation even a bit easier.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Now, speaking of contracts, he signed We got the Bulls to sign their very first contract since coming on board, and that was the name of Marcel Fanamava. Very impressive tight head prop rejoining the Bulls. Must be fairly exciting to have him back in the fold.
Fantastic, yeah. I mean, it's a brilliant signing in my mind, you know, and I think that's part of what we'll see with this COVID-19 period is maybe a few further overseas players coming back to South Africa and plying their trade here again, you know. And Marcel went overseas at quite a young age, but I think he's still got a massive impact to have on South African rugby in years to come, you know. He's still young for a tight head prop, and I think in every rugby team, that's the starting point, a tight head prop. And with Marcel and Trevor now at the Vodacom Bulls, I think it's a great start.
Any other potential big names that we could see donning the famous blue in months to come?
You're going to have to wait and see, Derek. we're hoping there will be a few more.
I can imagine it must, because of course the money speaks, but when you've got a franchise as big as the Bulls, as you would know, having moved over there, I think in the past it could have been a question of, well, just invite players to join the Bulls and that should be enough. But those times have since changed. Of course, we've got the pound and the euro screaming and players making the move over there. But you want to bring pride back into the jersey, and not to say there isn't pride there now, but we've spoken about the lean years, and we've gone from winning three Super Rugby titles in 4 years to nothing in close to a decade now. And it is a decade, I think. And I'm sure there must be a massive motivation to get the Bulls to a position where it's easy to attract players, and it doesn't just need to be about how many zeros come at the end of that contract, but the fact that they get to represent one of the foremost, if not the most foremost, Super Rugby franchise in the country.
100% agree. I think it needs to be a culture thing at the end of the day where people want to play there. And I think that's where someone like Stefan Krauser, who was quite instrumental in the success of Saracens and the culture they created there, is adding massive value from the board side. Look, Pretoria is a great place to live, and I think the facilities that the Bulls have and the structure that they have there is inviting for players. And if you can create a culture where people want to stay, not just for the money, then you're definitely on the right track.
In terms of that culture, of course, the Blue Bulls are synonymous with Afrikaans, based in Pretoria, always had dominated by Afrikaans players, coaches, etc. Now suddenly you've got an English-speaking coach, you've got a very young CEO in charge who is very fluent in English, I think, though, Afrikaans originally, Edgar?
Correct, John.
Thank you, Arthur. Some have said Issa.
Name and surname doesn't give it away.
Yeah, need to fill Engelsen Mandaso. But yes, so a changing of the guard, so to speak. And do you think that will be tough to win fans over as well? Because, again, you've got the conservative fans who – and, again, it's amazing to me. Sorry, I'm harping back. But the Bulls – people always talk about the Bulls being a conservative brand – yet they were probably the first to adopt incredible running rugby. We look back at the Heineken-Meyer era. What was that 92-3 victory of the Reds or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah.
When Brian Abana was just absolutely amazing. With Puma on board, the changing of the kits to the away kits, which was the purple, the color of the jacarandas, etc. So while the Bulls may have this aura of conservatism, I don't think it really always has fitted the bill. And we look back in the past, and here again, you've got Jake White in charge. You've got this young CEO. And I say changing of the guard, but maybe it isn't so much changing of the guard.
Derek, I think it's a fine balance between keeping the history and renewing. You know, the legends that have played for the Bulls and that are still in and around in Pretoria, these guys still play a massive part, and we need to get them to believe in our strategy going forward and believe in the Bulls again, because that changes the perception of your general fan. And you need to get Pretoria businesses and big businessmen within Pretoria to buy into the strategy. But I agree with you. I think Bulls have been actually great innovators in the last few years. So I don't think it's that big a change. And like I said, someone like Jake with his experience, and having experienced a lot of different teams across the world, really adds massive value into that. You know, he knows what works and what doesn't.
And finally, the dreaded C word, and without stating the obvious, how incredibly devastating has COVID-19 been in the industry?
Man, Derek, I think it's really been challenging. But our biggest focus right now is to look after each and every employee and making sure him or her and their family are looked after. We need to take out every measure to do that, you know, and that is the only priority right now. Obviously, with that goes and keeping the businesses running, and we can't do that without the support of partners, and they've been great, you know. So it's a team effort. It's a South African rugby effort as a whole. And the leadership that we've gotten from SA Rugby through Yuri and Mark has been fantastic in this time.
I was speaking to Jacques Fall recently, also on the show, acting CEO of Cricket South Africa, and he said you can't put into words how devastating it has been in sport throughout the world. And obviously it's uncharted waters. So yep, we don't know when we were going to recover from this. And I see over in New Zealand now that they're allowing the in-house Super Rugby, so to speak. First, yeah, I was a bit surprised that was even allowed, using the name Super Rugby while it was a completely separate competition. But yeah, do you think that could be something that South Africa could potentially adopt? So a Curry Cup by another name, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, Derek, I think that's, to answer that question very, very shortly, is just, I think that's what makes the whole current situation a bit difficult, is the uncertainty. We don't know when we will be able to get into the park and how that will look like, you know. But yeah, obviously we're investigating all sorts of possibilities, and that might be one of them, you know. But the quicker we get onto the park, the better it is for the businesses.
And in terms of players with pay, have you had to take pay cuts or make pay cuts, or have they been able to survive the chop for now? And how long would that last?
No, I mean, I think it's been widely reported that there's been a sort of an industry salary plan that's been agreed upon by all franchises in South Africa. So unfortunately, we are in a scenario of salary cuts. But that is being applied consistently through all franchises and provinces within South Africa and SA Rugby.
Do you have, I mean, you said the uncertainty, and of course you've certainly got your ear to the ground, or you would have your ear to the ground along with all the other franchises with regards to when things, if there is some kind of light at the end of this very, very dark tunnel. For now, is it still extremely dark, or can you see a bit of a glimmer at the end?
Yeah, Derek, it is quite dark still. As I said, from SA Rugby side, they're doing great work in chatting to government on how and when we can get back to play. But yeah, unfortunately, right now there's no real clarity on it. But hopefully, in the near future, we'll get clarity on it. You know, and we will know in which direction we need to go, and if that is playing in front of empty stadiums in the beginning, then so be it. I think, again, we need to look after everybody and make sure everybody's safe first, and then we can worry about the other things.
Yeah, we're all certainly holding thumbs, and yeah, we really are missing live sport. I've spoken a bit about it elsewhere, but I host a weekly sporting quiz online, and we're desperate to get you on as a guest. We're hosting one a little later tonight. We've got the likes of Albie Morkel featuring Aidan Markram, etc. So, yeah, sooner rather than later, we'll have the new CEO of the Bulls taking part. But but it's actually a good thing that you're missing out tonight, because I'd want it so that you are the CEO at the time, because you aren't quite filling the role just yet. When do you start officially?
Derek, at this time, the planning is 1 June. Obviously, I've got a few things to finalize in my current position, and wouldn't want to sort of leave a few things up in the air. At this stage, the planning is 1 June.
Ah, brilliant. Well, best of luck in the new role. Thoroughly deserved. And I can only see you going from strength to strength, as you've done throughout your relatively short career. And yeah, best of luck to the Bulls. And as we spoke about them being the most successful Super Rugby franchise in SA rugby history, I'm sure that all Bulls fans will be hoping that they return to their former glories, and that you'll be able to guide them there.
Yeah, thanks, Derek, and thanks for the chat. I really enjoyed it. I think you're 100% right. The Bulls fans definitely deserve those results, and hopefully we can bring it to them quite soon.
Excellent. Cheers, Edgar.
Thanks, Derek. Cheers, man.
Thanks for listening to Inside the Game, brought to you by Raider Media.